A new study shows there might be uses for GLP-1 medications beyond their applications for diabetes and weight loss. Could treatment for addiction be one of them? You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss this are founder of the website OnThePen.com, Dave Knapp, and regional medical director for Groups Recover Together, Angela Vogt. Thank you both for being here today. Angela, what can you tell us about the use of GLP-1 medications to treat addiction?
Well, thank you for having me. The use of GLP-1s in the treatment of addictions is still in the investigative stage. There have been a few studies that show there may be some decrease in cravings for those who have addictions of a variety of type and may decrease mortality for this subset of people. Hmm.
Dave, does this mean these initial studies, do they mean that GLP-1s could be acting against cravings for drugs and alcohol in addition to acting against cravings for food?
Yeah, Lucy, thanks again for having me. I think that that's definitely what we're seeing. And if you need any proof at all, the next generation of these drugs, especially from Eli Lilly, who's sort of the leader right now in the GLP-1 space, they're studying a new generation of these GLP-1 or incretin therapies is probably a better way to say it, exclusively in things like alcohol use disorder and opioid use disorder, bipolar, schizophrenia, so everything from smoking to drinking to opioid use, you're seeing clinical trials, double-blind placebo-controlled trials being done right now.
Dave, you mentioned Eli Lilly. I believe that drug, if I'm saying it right, is brinipatide. And as a treatment for smoking cessation, I know is one of the things Eli Lilly is studying. So does this kind of raise a question of, can one medication tackle several different problems all at once?
Yeah. I think it's a great question. And I think I'm not sure that this is where maybe the drug companies set out to explore these drugs. Obviously, they were developed initially for diabetes and then ultimately for obesity when they found that folks with diabetes were losing weight. You know, I guess I lean heavily on the experience of those in the On the Pen community. So we have a community of about 175,000 people on these medications. And one of the more interesting things that I found right away was, of course, people were losing weight. Of course, people were controlling their A1C. But I kept hearing reports of people saying, you know, I used to go to the casino twice a week. Now I don't even want to go. Or I've quit smoking with the use of a GLP-1. So I think they identified very early on that these were affecting sort of that pleasure reward center of your brain in a very meaningful way and something that was definitely worth studying deeper.
Hmm. Angela, we already have drugs to treat various types of substance use disorders, but the studies that I've seen indicate GLP-1s could help with a wide array of them, as you mentioned. Does this suggest some kind of universal pathology when it comes to addiction?
Well, I think as Dave was saying, you know, the reward system of our brain is maybe at the core of this. And there's, you know, the research is early, but it's encouraging to see that these medications may alter the, as they alter food noise, may alter the noise of other cravings for other substances. As we know, there are not solid treatments for some of the stimulant use disorder in particular. Limited treatment for alcohol use disorder. So these are exciting developments.
Angela, can you talk more about that noise? That might not be terminology that people have heard in relation to substance use disorders before. What do you mean by that, quieting that noise?
Yeah, that noise that tells us we're hungry when maybe our body's actually not hungry for calories, but, you know, there are other pathways in that reward system telling us that we might be hungry. And this can be similar. We think it might be similar to cravings for substances. You know, we don't necessarily, that person might necessarily need to have more pain medication or doesn't need to have another drink, but that tickle, that noise is still there driving that in the background.
Dave, what are the potential side effects for these GLP-1s? I've read about some people who struggle to experience pleasure when they're taking these medications.
Yeah, I love this question because I feel like in the online community, it's one of the more under-discussed topics because everybody wants to talk about how much weight they've lost and before and afters. But I think this is a really important conversation to have, and I'm glad that you brought it up. So what you're referencing there is there's actually a medical term called anhedonia, and it's kind of a big term, but one of the interesting things that I found early on when following the companies that make these drugs is that their CEOs referred to them as anti-hedonic drugs. So drugs dealing with the pleasure, again, the pleasure reward center of your brain. Obviously, if you're turning that off to reduce energy intake in the form of food, you may be turning off pleasure for other things. And that's something that definitely has been reported with folks, especially it seems, again, this is anecdotal reporting, but especially it seems on the higher doses of these drugs, just sort of this lack of luster, this lack of excitement for many things in life beyond just food. Outside of the anhedonia, the main side effects that you really hear from people across this class of medications called incretin mimetics, they're basically peptides that mimic naturally occurring hormones that your body releases in response to eating food, right? And so mainly across the class of these medications, the side effects are GI related. And so they're pretty typical across all of these different medications and mostly experienced when folks dose up on the medications. That's more the more broad side effect that I think is more widely discussed.
Well, we're talking about other potential uses for GLP-1 medications beyond diabetes and weight loss. Do you have questions or comments? Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. And we did get an email from a listener. The listener writes, "I am a recovering opioid addict who uses methadone under the care of a doctor. I've been very successful with methadone. However, I want a path away from medication-assisted therapy. What are the guests' thoughts about using GLP-1s as a path to transition away from medication-assisted therapy?" Angela, is this something that you have thoughts about? Have you seen any research about this, you know, in regards to this question?
I've not seen any research in regards to this question, but I would say that there are several different types of medication that are used in the treatment of opioid use disorder, and utilizing a GLP-1 inhibitor would also be medication-assisted treatment, just a different medication. But it is, it's not something I've seen the research on. Again, I'm excited to see what comes of the studies that are out there. And I think that everyone in recovery gets to drive their own recovery. And so if there are choices out there outside of what, you know, methadone, buprenorphine can offer, and that's more comfortable for someone, in their own recovery, then that's just a bonus for everyone.
What if, and again, this is, I know the research on this is still pretty early and there are a lot more study yet to be done, but for people who are considering these medications to treat addiction of some kind of substance use disorder, is there a thought that this could be something that the GLP-1 would be something they would need to take long term, or is there a way to transition off of it? Angela or Dave, do either of you have thoughts about that?
I, you know, in my knowledge of GLP-1s, what we've seen is that folks typically do need to stay on that medication long term for weight loss. But I defer to Dave for any research that's being done in this area.
Yeah, I think that this is a great topic of discussion. In fact, there was some recent data that was published that showed the weight rebound in patients. This was a post-marketing study, right? So not like a double-blind placebo control, but looking at patient record data. And basically what they have found across the board with GLP-1 medications is that the weight rebound is pretty quick. Within a year, most patients who stopped therapy regained about 60% of what they lost during their treatment period. And that may sound like, well, these people just didn't change their behavior well enough. Well, I think what it actually speaks more to is the fact that the disease of obesity is complex. There's underlying biology that these medications are helping to treat, including hormonal dysregulation. And so if you think about it in terms of the way that maybe we think about high blood pressure, if you're on a therapy that's bringing your blood pressure down, you go, hey, my blood pressure is good. I don't need this medication anymore. And what typically happens to patients is that they're blood pressure rebounds, right? It goes back up. And so I think we need to start thinking about it the same way as we think about other chronic conditions or other chronic diseases. And one thing I'd just like to add, if I may, to the listener who sent the email in about the opioid use disorder, I obviously am not a clinician. I'm just a gentleman who looks at this stuff very closely and leads a community of a lot of people on it. That said, as we spoke about earlier, brenipatide, this new medication from Lilly, there are clinical trials enrolling currently, and I really highly recommend you go to clinicaltrials.gov and search brenipatide. It's B-R-E-N-I-P-A-T-I-D-E. And there's actually studies enrolling right now for folks who may have an interest in looking at the future of these medications to help treat conditions such as opioid use disorder.
Dave, I want to talk to you. You were talking about the rebound that happens for people who use these GLP-1s for treatment of obesity and then stop using the medications. Is there a point for people who are taking the GLP-1s where they continue to take the GLP-1s, but the weight loss stops? So it's a maintenance medication at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. So some folks are what we call super responders or hyper responders to these medications. And even sometimes at low doses are able to hit, let's call it their weight loss goals. And so then it becomes a sort of a moving target of what is the proper dose if any medication is needed at all to maintain that progress. For others, there are various very serious plateaus for what these medications alone are going to help accomplish from a weight loss standpoint. You see that all through the clinical trials across the class of medications. All of these medications plateau at a certain point. And the clinical trials give us averages, right? So the leading drug on the market when it comes strictly to weight loss is going to be tirzepatide. You know it probably as Zepbound. And Zepbound shows about 22% weight loss over 72 weeks. And that was pretty well plateaued by the end of the study. You see some people in the real world who exceed that and some people who don't get anywhere near that. So clearly, the drugs that are on the market today are just the advent. In the future of these medications will treat more severe metabolic disease. Mm-hmm.
Is there any concern? And I appreciate that explanation because I guess I wonder for people who find success with these GLP-1s when it comes to substance use disorder, is there a concern that these drugs could maybe stop helping with substance use disorder when weight loss stops?
I think that's a astute point. I think will there be a point where these medications stop working for those patients? Now, interestingly enough, and I would have to do a deeper dive and default to somebody who is more maybe well-versed at reading clinical trial criteria, but taking a brief look at all of these studies for brenipatide, this future one that's very, very neurological disorder focused, I would say that it doesn't appear that this molecule seems to have obesity as a criteria. So I believe what they've done, and I may be speaking, I am speaking sort of speculatively here, is titrated the activity of these drugs on these receptors in a way that it doesn't affect weight as much. That said, I could be speaking out of turn there. Somebody knows more than me about this stuff, needs to look closely at it. But I think it's a fair question to ask whether or not these medications could continue to or could reach a plateau sort of in that sort of therapy. And I suppose that's what one of the things that they'll uncover as they run these various clinical trials.
Angela, one of the studies that I saw that came out most recently was done by Washington University that studied the researchers there examined medical records from the VA, just hundreds of thousands of medical records. what do you know about some of the clinical trials that are underway or getting started when it comes to the use of GLP-1s to treat addiction? Have you been following those? I know Dave has mentioned brinipatide, this Eli Lilly drug. What else are you watching when it comes to clinical trials for these drugs and addiction?
Well, I can't say I'm abreast of the newer trials. I am aware of the Washington University study, which was not a prospective study. It was randomized, but not prospective. So I do think that we need to have, we need that next step in clinical trials to really understand what's happening with these medications and their effect on our reward systems.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Angela, it sounds like the theory is, you know, these drugs can maybe address the brain chemistry that plays such a significant role in substance use disorder. You were talking about that rewards center. But what about some of the underlying triggers or the why behind addiction? I mean, even if these drugs can address the brain chemistry, do you think it's still important to address those triggers, that why?
Absolutely. When people are able to stabilize their use disorder, whether that be through medication-assisted treatment or, the recovery system of their choice, then they can start to attend to the why and the triggers and, you know, often mental health issues, past trauma, the things we know play into use disorders.
Dave, is that important even for the use of these drugs for obesity to think about that maybe some of the other underlying factors or emotional triggers or that sort of thing?
I think 100%. I think obesity is a chronic relapsing multifactorial disease. And when you isolate kind of that idea of it being multifactorial, for many folks, their obesity is often addiction based or driven by a certain comfort that food gives them. And I think it's extremely important that whatever, you know, there's multiple types of hunger, right? There's this hedonic hunger that these drugs address. And then there's more of a homeostatic hunger that's a hunger driven by your biology, just wanting to keep your body running. And then there's a gut microbiome driven hunger. This focuses in on the hedonic. So if you're a very big responder to these medications, chances are there's some things that could use some mental work in terms of what are those key drivers driving you to use food as comfort or to binge eat or to use food as sort of a coping mechanism. And so addressing the mental side of these is you start thinking about these things in terms of tools, right? Sometimes you need many tools to address an issue that's going on, and obesity is definitely one of them. And so therapy is a tool, obesity medicine is a tool, exercise is a tool. All these things are tools in our arsenal to help treat the chronic disease of obesity.
Yeah. Dave, is there much discussion about that in the community online, do you think? Are folks talking about, hey, this medication is working great for me, but maybe I need to look at some of these other things too?
Yeah, I think it is definitely a topic of conversation. I think it's one that's maybe less often discussed. The dominant driver of the online conversation, sort of the meta conversation around GLP-1s, is definitely more that before and after. It's the glamorous stuff, right? It's the highlight reel. It's the way in which people use social media generally, sort of extrapolated out to this niche. But it is a topic of conversation, I would say, especially in folks who are slower responders to the medication, who maybe, you know, the medication for many people, they get on it. Like I said, they super respond, they get their weight down, and then they can sort of focus on other things, other health issues that they've had when they couldn't focus on those before because the weight was the main driver. I think for many people who struggle to lose weight, it causes them ultimately to reflect and say, what are the other tools in the arsenal that I can pull out to try to get to where I want to be?
Yeah. Angela, when you think about this overall, is this one of those areas where you'd advise caution when people are looking or using these drugs for weight loss or to treat any of these other issues? I mean, is it one of those things to kind of do your homework and really think about it before you decide a GLP-1 is the way you want to go for substance use disorder or anything else?
Yes, I think with any medication treatment for any chronic disease or any health issue, there needs to be, informed consent about that medication, what it can do for us, what the side effects might be, the risk versus benefit. And that's true of all medications across all situations.
And Dave, I know you hear from literally tens of thousands of people about this all the time. Is that kind of the conversation too, to really do your homework and be careful? And I also wonder what you're going to be watching for, Dave, as these clinical trials continue.
Great question. So I think across the again, the sort of meta conversation that takes place online, so much is focused on the highlight reel, but you are seeing more discussions. In fact, we're having a lot of discussions about this at On the Pen currently. Like right now, I'm taking a break from these medications myself personally, because to make a long story short, I just got on the really high doses very quickly because of shortages. And being at the high doses for a long time, I noticed they were just turning some things off for me from an enjoyment standpoint that I didn't want to. And so I'm sort of taking a washout period to sort of reevaluate and then reintroduce the medications, maybe a little bit slower, lower and slower and intentionally. But I'm really excited for the future of these medications, because I think a lot of people who struggle, even on the current treatments, will have a lot to look forward to in the future.
Well, I've been talking with founder of the website onthepen.com, Dave Knapp, and regional medical director for Groups Recover Together, Angela Vogt. Thank you both so much for your time today. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director today is Ella Rowan. And if you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.